Welcome to the show. Here's the question of the day. Should the federal government restrict certain people from having access to certain types of foods? I'm a highly libertarian-minded person, and I believe the answer to that question is a resounding yes. If you think that sounds Orwellian or anti-freedom, stay with me and I'll explain why I feel strongly that certain foods should be restricted from some people. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that as you hear my reasoning, you're going to agree with me.
The Dr. Reality Vodcast with Dave Champion.
Let's start with this. I'm the author of Body Science, a groundbreaking book on human physiology that is turning around the health of the American people, at least those who read Body Science and apply what they discover. I share that to make the point that I'm not just some influencer saying something to create controversy. My wheelhouse is nutritional physiology, and I have solid scientific reasons to hold the view that the federal government should restrict certain kinds of foods to which some Americans can have access. Before I get rolling, let me share that I'll be telling you about the current special on my books, such as Body Science, at the end of the presentation, so stick around for that. Let me jump straight to the heart of the issue. I'm only advocating restricting the food choices of people who are receiving taxpayer money to feed themselves or their family, and I'm only advocating those restrictions apply to when they're using taxpayer money to buy food. To put a finer point on it, I am specifically talking about people who participate in any of the following federal welfare programs: SNAP benefits, which used to be called food stamps, food assistance programs for older adults, emergency food assistance, the WIC program, food assistance for Native Americans. Let me state a truth I'm confident is obvious to most everybody, at least it should be, I would think. People who do not earn enough money to feed themselves also don't have enough money to pay for their own medical care. In other words, the same people who are on any of the aforementioned food assistance programs will also be on Medicaid or Medicare. What that means is those who are getting taxpayer support for food are also having American taxpayers pay their medical bills. At this point, let me be clear that I am not advocating for or against government food assistance or medical care. Those are political questions, and this presentation is about just two things. First, nutritional science, not politics. And second, fiscal responsibility, which in my mind falls into the category of plain old common sense. I wish I could begin by telling you how bad the health problems are for those who receive food assistance. But I can't, because that research does not exist. It seems there is an establishment blackout on determining disease prevalence among those who receive food assistance. When I say there is an establishment blackout, I mean the government is intentionally blocking the data from getting to the public, which includes not being available to researchers. Why do I say there is an intentional blackout on the information? I say that because a person seeking food assistance must provide a Social Security number, as must a person who enrolls in Medicare or Medicaid. Further, the government knows every single food item a person purchases using a food support program like SNAP. And the government knows what diseases those same people are being treated for by Medicare or Medicaid. And to be clear, the data can be anonymized. A matching program can link a person's food assistance program purchases with the diseases for which that person is being treated through Medicare or Medicare. Once those two records are linked, the person's Social Security number can be substituted with a randomized number. In short, the government has all the data needed to connect the consumption of certain types of foods to the diagnosis of various chronic diseases. Because what I'm describing is so simple for the government to do, one should reasonably question why it isn't being done. When I was in law enforcement, I worked almost exclusively in poor communities. Anyone who has spent time in those communities knows most people eat a ton of high carbohydrate foods. Much of it is ultra-processed, chock full of chemicals, sugars, seed oils, and it is readily available everywhere from the grocery store to the gas station Quick Mart. If American taxpayers are footing the bill for much of the food consumed by food assistance recipients, shouldn't those footing the bill be able to see what their money is buying? A quick note before I continue. If you enjoy this kind of knowledge that you'll never get from any other source other than this channel, please take a moment to subscribe and then hit the like button so the algorithm show this content to more people. Also, for a limited time, you can get free shipping on any of my writings, including Body Science, as long as Income Tax Shattering the Myth is included in your order. Simply use the coupon code TARIFFS at checkout. I'll give you more information on Income Tax Shattering the Myth in a few minutes. Currently, ultra-processed foods are 62% of the diet of young Americans. That number is likely higher in households receiving food assistance. As the author of Body Science, I can tell you that high carbohydrate consumption is the root of the vast majority of chronic diseases in America. And as we already discussed, the same people who are on food assistance programs are also on Medicare or Medicaid. What I just shared with you about my time working in poor communities and seeing what they eat is anecdotal. But the government possesses the data that can show a connection between the consumption of certain kinds of foods and what chronic diseases those people have. Yet the government won't let the American people see that data. Before I share why I believe the government is keeping this data hidden from the very people who are footing the bill, let me share a simple truth with you. The U.S. government's food pyramid has precisely zero to do with human health. In fact, it's a prescription for illness. Since day one, its purpose has been to promote the agricultural industry. If you take the food pyramid and reverse the order of what you see there, you'll be exponentially healthier than following the government's nutritional advice. So then, why won't the government anonymize its data and let the people who are footing the bill see that data? For the same reason that it won't get rid of the disease-promoting food pyramid more than three decades after introducing it. It's all about protecting trillion-dollar industries at the cost of the health of the American people. Phrased another way, keeping profits of major U.S. corporations growing is far more important to the United States government than your health. With that said, some states want to change things a bit, but they have very little latitude to do so because state food assistance programs are actually funded by the federal government. And what's the golden rule? He with the gold makes the rules. A state that wants to restrict what can be purchased on a food assistance program has to seek a waiver from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The states that have received waivers are Colorado, Florida, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Texas, West Virginia, Arkansas, Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, Nebraska, and Utah. Unfortunately, the list of restricted items approved in those waivers is ludicrously short. Depending on which state we're talking about, the prohibited items are soft drinks, energy drinks, and candy. That's it. So what's the practical impact of that? As an example, while in some states a person cannot use SNAP to buy a can of Coke, he or she can use SNAP to buy a box of Hostess Ho-Hos. A can of Coke has 39 grams of sugar, and a single serving of Ho-Hos has 41 grams of sugar. Also, the states that prohibit a SNAP recipient from buying soda pop make no distinction between sugar-filled products and one using an artificial sweetener. So a SNAP recipient is free to buy, as an example, treetop apple juice, which has 25 grams of sugar in a single serving, but can't buy a diet soft drink that has 0 grams of sugar. This makes no sense because chronic diseases develop from high carbohydrate intake, of which sugar is the worst form of carbohydrates. Let's consider the Berea brand penne pasta. A single serving, which is 2 ounces, has 42 grams of carbs. Most people are probably more likely to have around 8 ounces at a sitting. That's 168 grams of carbs. But you'll want to have sauce on that. If you use a half cup of Prego pasta sauce, add 12 more grams of carbs. In other words, in certain states, a SNAP recipient can't buy a diet soda with 0 grams of carbs, but can purchase penne and pasta sauce, whip herself up a bowl, which will come in at 180 grams of carbs. And that's just one meal. It does not take into account snacking, which has become astoundingly prevalent. The average young American male consumes about 400 grams of carbs a day, and the average young American female consumes about 300 grams of carbs a day. To be clear, the true underlying problem that brings on chronic diseases is high insulin, but high carbohydrate consumption is what drives high insulin. To be even more specific, the cause of most chronic diseases in America is compromised mitochondrial function, otherwise known as metabolic dysfunction. And the path to metabolic dysfunction starts with people eating high carbohydrate foods. What often makes that truth hard for people to accept is that it takes years of eating high carbohydrate foods before the diseases present. It is a gradual process of mitochondrial degradation. For the person who is eating a high carbohydrate diet, it isn't a matter of if they'll wind up with chronic diseases, it's only a matter of when. I discussed the carbohydrate-driven slow progression from health to the diseased state in detail in Body Science. All of that brings us to the reality that unless the federal government is dramatically more restrictive about what can be purchased on food assistance programs, we'll go from funding food assistance to also paying tens of thousands of dollars a year for that person's medical care. I suspect we're already there, which may be part of the reason that the government refuses to make the data available. I generally don't like to bring my personal experience into these presentations, but for comparison's sake, the number of carbs I eat in a day is generally 3 to 5 grams. A big carb day for me is 8 or 9 grams. So what's the outcome of consuming almost no carbs? Well, here in a few weeks, I'll be 66 years old. I am 100% healthy, zero health issues, no chronic diseases, no big pharma products, and I never get sick. Now, someone is going to say I shouldn't use myself as an example because I obviously hit the genetic lottery. Yeah, not even close. My mom had cancer, and my dad was diabetic and had atherosclerosis for years. He had 2 heart attacks, dying from the second one. So, what gives a person diseases such as insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, atherosclerosis, and cancer, among others? Metabolic dysfunction, the long road to which begins with eating high carbohydrate foods. So then, what food should be restricted in food assistance programs? In my opinion, that's the wrong question. The right question is, what is the short list of items that should be permitted to be purchased on a food assistance program? If I were in charge, here is the list of permitted grocery items. Any items rendered from a cow. Any items rendered from a pig, including bacon and Spam. Chicken, which should include the cooked version in the hot case in a grocery store. Fish of any kind, including canned. Any green vegetable, except artichokes and Brussels sprouts, which are really high in carbs. Specific sugar-free beverages that provide electrolytes, such as sodium, chloride, magnesium, and potassium. That's it. If I were in charge, that's all that could be purchased using a food assistance program. But Dave, they cry, what about things like potatoes and bread? What about them? Food assistance recipients would be free to purchase those things, just not using taxpayer money. Then there are the folks who will say, oh, this is all wrong because saturated fat is bad for you and red meat causes cancer and diabetes and the human body needs carbohydrates. It's hard to know what to say to those folks, at least politely, because they're the same people who think mRNA injections are actually safe and effective, and wearing a mask stops a virus. Such people see themselves as holding the moral high ground, when in reality they don't know a thing about physiology or pharmacology, and actively promote narratives that cause people to become ill, and in some cases die. At the outset, I told you that I had sound scientific reasons for my view about restricting certain people from certain foods, and that once you heard my reasons, you'd agree. So, do you? Let me know down in the comments. Also, do you know that I have not filed an income tax return or paid a penny of income tax in 32 years? I bring that up because it's time to tell you about the special I'm running on my books. And that requires me to tell you a little bit about my other book, Income Tax Shattering the Myth, which shows the American people the wonderfully liberating truth that Congress has never imposed the income tax on ordinary, hardworking Americans like you. Let me ask you a question. How many words of income tax law have you read? I don't mean forms, publications, or something on a website. I mean actual law. For 99.9% of you, the answer to that is you've never read a word of tax law. I've been reading income tax statutes, regs, and treasury decisions for more than 3 decades. So who do you think knows the truth about the income tax law? People who've never read a word of it, or someone who's been reading it for 3 decades? What's the practical difference between knowing what the law says versus buying into the government's false narrative? Let's compare. I haven't filed an income tax return or paid a penny of income tax in 32 years. How much did you get raped for last year? That's the difference right there. I keep what's mine for one reason, because I know what the law says. On the other hand, you give your money to a rapacious, irresponsible, and wasteful government because you do not know what the law says. It's really that simple. The cool thing is that by reading one book, you will know with absolute certainty that you don't owe income tax and never have. And then, when you're an informed citizen, you can decide what you want to do about that. Stay in the system or safely exit the scam. Tens of thousands of Americans have read Income Tax Shattering the Myth. So, how many of them closed the final page and knew with absolute certainty that Congress never imposed the income tax on them? That would be all of them, everyone, because Income Tax Shattering the Myth provides mountains of incontrovertible evidence that no one, even the government, has been able to refute. Income Tax Shattering the Myth is the keys to the kingdom. I'm going to help you get your hands on a copy by telling you about the special. On my website, drreality.news, any order that contains Income Tax Shattering the Myth gets you free shipping. Just use the code TARIFFS at checkout. I'm going to suggest you purchase the 4-pack containing Income Tax Shattering the Myth, the Business Guide to Payroll Withholding, the Business Handbook for Forms W-9, 1099, and U.S. Person, and Body Science. A quick word about body science. It doesn't just show you the science behind the dietary problems we've discussed today. It shows you the science behind how to get incredibly healthy and stay that way your entire life. The best reason to get the 4-pack is the price is already deeply discounted from purchasing the 4 items individually. The second reason is that in addition to it being deeply discounted, you get free shipping using the coupon code TARIFFS. You have my word that body science and Income Tax Shattering the Myth will be two of the most influential books you'll read in your lifetime. My word on that. Also, purchasing my writings helps me to continue to be here for you with these revealing and thought-provoking presentations. Thank you for sharing your time with me today. I hope you found our time well spent.